Welcome to The Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and an avid porn consumer. You might have noticed in other episodes from all the many times we've talked about porn. Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and a sex blogger, and have actually been watching more porn since starting T than I did beforehand.
Interesting.
Yeah.
We should do a study or something. And we have a very special guest with us today, author, journalist, porn critic, Lindsay G. Hi, thanks for coming on our show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Could you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, I'm always trying to come up with the right terminology. I think the closest would be like porn critic, maybe. Because I've spent a lot of time watching and reviewing porn, but I also do a lot of journalism about the porn industry. So I'm kind of like I guess I'm a critic. I'm not sure what the right word is. When you tell someone porn journalist, they're like, what? It's not a thing. And neither is porn critic, but it feels a little bit more to the point. So I guess that's my deal.
I mean, I feel like that's kind of the nature of any job in, like, the sex industry and sex-adjacent industry is, like, so I invented a job title and then started doing that thing, and that's who I am.
I always say I'm a sex journalist, and I've had people think that that means that I go and watch people have sex and write about it, which, like, occasionally I do, but that's not kind of the main part of what I do. How did you get interested in porn originally? Because, like, it's such a specific niche. Like, I know a lot of people who write about sex more generally, but I think you're the only person I know of who really focuses in on porn. So, like, how did that start for you?
It was kind of by accident. I went to college in New York, and then I spent 2 years trying other places, and I, like, basically went crawling back to New York, like, desperate. And broke. And I was just telling all my friends, like, do you know anyone who needs a writer or an editor? Like, hook me up. And the first job that came along was as a DVD reviewer for, like, a really nasty porno magazine. And at first, like, I thought it was going to be, like, so glamorous. I thought, like, wow, like, I had been watching a ton of internet porn, and I thought that internet porn was, like, not real porn. Mm-hmm. I thought that if I was reviewing DVDs, I'd be getting, like, the good stuff. and this was in 2007, so, like, there wasn't good stuff. But I had no idea, so I was like, yeah, hook me up, that sounds fantastic, I'm gonna be so cool. And, you know, what I got was basically just DVDs of the same stuff that I'd been watching online, because that's what porn was. Mm-hmm. And I was, like, horrified, but, you know, also turned on. And also I really needed some money.
Been there.
I had to, like, find a way to keep doing it and keep making the money and also justify it to myself. So I got really, like, thinky about it, and I started, like, writing about what a weird position I found myself in, as, you know, like, a woman and a feminist and also watching really hardcore gonzo porn for mm-hmm. money. It, like, randomly landed a column at McSweeney's for a year. Like, had a contest. And mine was one of, like, five, I think, that were selected. So I started writing about just my strange position as a porn critic. And it kind of took off from there. I went in, like, a bunch of different directions, but the more I got into it, the more I realized, like, how much there is to the porn industry mm-hmm. that people, especially at that time, had no idea about, and I never had either. And I'm still going, like, 10 years later, and there's still more to write about, and that's what I'm doing.
That's awesome.
Well, I was going to say, I think that's really interesting because we also, we both started out as sex toy reviewers mm-hmm. and kind of were, like, focused very much on reviewing and then slowly moved away from that with more like personal essays and things like that, because there's only so much you can do with reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's probably similar with reviewing porn too. Like, there's only so much to say about every scene.
Right. Right. Like, okay, this was hot. Next.
Like, yeah, like, I mean, I feel like at least with sex toys, I have a little bit, it's almost like reviewing tech, right? You know, you can talk about how strong is the vibration, how good are the controls, but I feel like the few times I've tried to even consider writing about porn, it's so, like, so much more ephemeral, and I'm just like, it was hot and the lighting was good? Like,
The really interesting thing at the magazine that I started writing for was, like, you know, they had like, a situation going on with the companies that actually sent us the DVDs. So I wasn't allowed to write a bad review.
Oh, like, geez.
Not write a review, or mm-hmm. I could write a good review. So, like, if I didn't write one, I didn't get paid for it. So I just had to come up with ways of, you know, like, saying good things about everything that came across my desk. And not all of it was hot. Because, like, in those days, porn was, like, it was super violent.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't the worst of it. Like, the editors definitely took one look at me and were like, okay, we're not going to give her the really grody stuff. I was like this country girl, and, you know, like, and I was like, give me a job, it'll be great, I can't wait. And they were like, oh God, here we go.
So I'm curious, like, since you're a feminist, and we are too, like, has the industry actually gotten better in terms of feminist ethics and representation, like, over the past 10 or 20 years? Have you seen improvement in those areas at all?
Yeah. Definitely.
Oh, good.
Like, I mean, 10 years ago when I got started, it was like the Wild West of the internet, you know, the heyday of, like, really hardcore, gonzo, like, borderline violence, very misogynistic looking porn. And I think, like, there were a lot of reasons why that was so popular then, but it's not as popular now. There's still some people making that kind of content. But a lot of it was, like, there was a lot of piracy going on, and people were, like, desperate to make money. So they would just put the most shocking thing that they could come up with, you know, on video and just put it on the internet as fast as possible to try to make a buck on it before somebody stole it from them.
Mm-hmm.
And it just resulted in a lot of, like, really upsetting stuff that was going on. But there's not as much of that going on now because, I mean, there's still a lot of piracy and mm-hmm. people are still pretty desperate, but it's not that sort of, like, panicked situation that was going on 10 years ago. People right. have kind of figured out, you know, what their market is, how they're going to make some money on what they're doing, and they've just calmed down. And then I've looked back at, like, 20 years ago was, like, the boom times for porn, you know, like, the late 90s, everyone was making money hand over fist because the internet was really new. If you were using that, you were probably making a ton of money. And you could still make tons of money on DVDs and, you know, peep show booths. So, like, everything was still happening, you know, in, like, the meat world
mm-hmm.
that doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing with that was, although you had a lot of more, like, high visibility porn stars who maybe were doing really well and, like, from a feminist perspective were, you know, like, Jenna Jameson was kicking ass.
Mm-hmm.
Most porn performers at that time, and even to a lesser degree 10 years ago, were controlled very much by producers that ran porn companies.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever the person or a few people in charge of the company was got to tell you what you had to look like to be working with their company. They got to tell you what you could do on camera and what you couldn't. And if you didn't fit the mold of what they were looking for, you didn't have a job. You weren't going to make any money.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you had a lot of, like, the cookie cutter, like, I think people still have this idea in their head that a porn star is a white blonde woman with fake boobs. But it's really not so prevalent anymore. But back then it was, because that's what the people at the top thought would sell.
Right.
So at this point, like, people are making their own content. You know, you can make your own videos and put them on your own website, make your own money from your own fans, and you don't even have to involve a producer if you don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
So there's also just like way more feminist discourse happening around everything in the world right now than there was 20 years ago. It's like, for better or worse, a hot topic.
Yeah.
I think there are a lot of people out there who pay lip service to being, you know, feminist porn makers and being ethical on set without maybe necessarily following through with it. But they're at least thinking because they know it's important. And that is, like, way, way different than it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, I want to, like, take a step back a little bit there and just talk about, because you had kind of in the beginning compared feminist porn to like this gonzo hardcore stuff, and I think a lot of people assume feminist porn is like soft lighting and pretty story based stuff and like, you know, right on that edge between like soft core but oh my god, I saw a penis and like
not a penis
and
no.
like oh my god
get
I
that
know.
Out of here
and like yes, that exists, but there's also a whole other slew of things that can be considered feminist porn. Mm-hmm. So I think I just want to take a second to like ask a little bit about like what makes porn feminist and like what kind of stuff is out there. Like there's more than that, yeah?
Yeah, that's a huge question.
Yeah, let's do like the Twitter version of that question. 'cause I know that's a lot to that. But just to kind of get people up to speed who are like, feminist porn? I once had someone tell me, like, completely assume that feminist porn was exclusively femdom pegging videos. Yeah. And, like, not no, but also.
Right, exactly. Like, I mean, I think the thing with feminist porn is, like, as of, like, 5 years ago, feminist porn was like the thing. It was like the hot new kid on the playground, you know, and like everyone wanted to be friends with the feminist pornographers. And then since then, it's sort of like diffused a little bit. I think there's still a lot of people that are making feminist porn, but they're not quite as rabid about claiming the title of feminist pornographer at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like even harder than it was before to sort of get a feel for like who's making feminist content. But I think like really what it comes down to is like the ethics that go into making it, which as a consumer can be really difficult to ascertain if you're watching on like Pornhub or, you know, a free porn site. You don't know what went into the making of it. So that's difficult. But, you know, basically if the content that you're making was made in such a way that everyone was treated well, you know, like nobody was told like, hang on, you can't come yet. Or like, or like,
unless they're into
some
that.
People, that is good treatment.
like if nobody was dictating on set, like, no, you can't do that because that's gross and nobody wants to see that.
Mm-hmm.
If people are treated well, being compensated fairly, not being like surprised on set with something that they're expected to do. You know, if everything is transparent, that's usually a sign that feminist porn is being made, whether it labels itself feminist or not. And another way of thinking of it, which doesn't always hold true, but often does, is if the porn is being made not specifically with a white middle-class male consumer in mind.
Yeah.
The porn that's made for middle-class white guys can't be feminist, because it absolutely can. But if you're watching something and, like, say it doesn't finish with, you know, a cis guy coming on a cis girl's face, it could be feminist porn.
You might have stumbled upon it.
If it's showing something that, you know, isn't, that you haven't seen 50,000 times before, it could be feminist porn because somebody's thinking about their audience from a different standpoint and thinking, like, hey, maybe women or gender non-binary people, or people of color, or, you know, people who don't fit that mold might want to watch porn, and maybe I want to make this for them. Mm-hmm. That's a good place.
Mm-hmm.
But that can mean anything. Like, literally.
Yeah, I've definitely noticed what you were saying about the diffusion of the feminist porn community, and like a way that we've seen that is like the feminist porn awards are not called that anymore. And also we went to them this year and they were terrible. Oh. Yeah, it was really sad.
Yeah.
And what was terrible? Tell me about it.
So we did a literal whole hour episode about all the ways that it was terrible, but to sum up, I think that the two major grievances were they showed blood play scenes with no content warning, and the MC of the event was like making non-consenty jokes all night. And it was really, really like not feminist and very uncomfortable. And like, I think the people who would go to an event like that are the people who would not want it to be that way. Like it was just really, it was awkward and bad.
Yeah,
that is such a shame. Like maybe they decided like we're not the feminist porn awards anymore, let's go like go for it,
right?
Yeah, we do what we want. Well, and the other thing is like no one was there, like none of the performers. Mm-hmm. So like no one accepted any of the awards, and we were all just like, woo, this is exciting for you wherever you are.
So sad to hear that.
Yeah, because it was like such an amazing event in years past, so yeah. I'm hoping they can like bring it back together and yeah. You know, mm-hmm. run a better event next year. But this year I was like, oh come on guys.
Yeah. Oh, what a bummer. Like I think the last time I was there was 2014, and it was honestly so big and mm-hmm. so yeah, huge. Yeah. It was almost like too much. Like
I was at that one too. Yeah, it was like a huge party basically.
Yeah, and like it was fun, but it was like overwhelming. Almost, yeah, which was great for them, mm-hmm. but too much for me.
Yeah, I want to ask you about amateur porn, but first I want to know if you are familiar with my favorite porn star, Heather Harmon of I Deep Throat. Do you know her?
No.
Oh my god. Okay, so she's like a deep throating amateur porn legend. To the point that, like, if I'm on a date with, like, a 20-something man and I mention her, typically he'll be like, oh, man, memories, like, nostalgic jerk-off sessions. I was just curious. I'm forever hunting her down because I really want to interview her for a piece or something because she hasn't been doing porn in, like, over 10 years, I think. So I was just curious. But amateur porn, you mentioned it a little bit earlier. It's super easy for people to record themselves having sex now and put it on the internet. And in lots of cases, it seems like people are doing that not necessarily for profit reasons, but just because like it's fun and sexy for them. So I'm wondering, like, how does that affect the industry that people are able to do that so easily?
It dilutes the industry, like in much the same way that like porn piracy does, because mm-hmm. It tends to the same places. I mean, I don't think anyone in the porn industry like hates amateur pornography or anything, you know. Great, like get on board, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some people do, but you know, for the most part it's a pretty benign relationship, but it is also making it a lot more difficult for people who are trying to hustle and make a buck mm-hmm. to actually make. But, like I said, you know, in 2007, when I got into the industry and everyone was like panicking and freaking out, since then, people have really gotten very clever about money-making opportunities. Like, I think that's actually the salient characteristic of the porn industry, is like figuring out how to make money on literally anything.
Crafty.
Yeah. So like, I think that, with amateur porn as competition, people who make porn for a living have just had to get a whole lot of like side hustles, you know? You have to like target your audience more and speak specifically to that audience and get that audience interested in paying for the things that you're selling, which a lot of the time will not be in the same digital space as like Pornhub, where you can find all the amateur porn. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like split your audience, get them alone on like, sale.com or, you know, on your cam show or on your store where you sell your used panties or whatever
mm-hmm.
and get them there. So it's definitely made things different And for some, more difficult. Like I said, like the producers at the top are not making nearly as much money as they used to, and they are very pissed off about it. But your average porn star can, if they have the right amount of hustle, can make a lot more money for themselves specifically than they would have, you know, making some money here and there for a porn producer that maybe would hire them.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And like, how does that differ from like profit sharing platforms? Like, I'm really interested in MakeLoveNotPorn.tv and like their whole system, because I've never really seen anything like that before. Like, what do you think about those?
Well, I personally am in love with Cindy Gallup, so
yeah, she's a babe.
So, but yeah, like I don't know. I feel like Make Love Not Porn is like the middle ground, you know, between amateur and non-amateur porn. You know, it's real world porn, as Cindy calls it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's fantastic. Like, I mean, I don't want to say, like, I would never say that people who are making amateur porn for fun and putting on the internet are like bad, because it's great.
Yeah,
do your, you know, like, awesome, be free, you know. Mm-hmm. Frolic. But at the same time, I think most people who do that are not thinking about the money situation that they could be causing for other people.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, like, you know, if it's like a revenge porn situation where you didn't even want it to end up on the internet, like, yeah, that's a whole, you know, kettle of worms. You say kettle of worms?
I think it's fish.
Fish. So then what's the worm? Whatever.
Can of worms. There you go.
That's it. Yeah, but I mean, I think I love the idea that Make Love Not Porn and other, if there are similar, you know, platforms that I don't know about. Mm-hmm. I love, like, hey, let's get you paid for the stuff that you want to make. Like, that's fantastic. And I 100% support that. But, you know, if you're a person that just wants to make some porn and put it online, then, you know, you do you. But, but if you want to make more, look up Cindy Gallup.
Yeah, she's great.
I definitely, like, have an exhibitionist streak and kind of started, you know, back in the day was like, you know, oh, I'll just like put my nudes online, that'll be fun, or like, you know, I'll put a video here or there or whatever and then do it because it's fun or whatever. And now, like, the past year and a half or so, I'm like, nah, shit, I can make money, like, people will pay. So I'm like, fuck all of that.
Yeah. All these sweet young things who haven't figured out, you know, that they need money to survive yet, like,
exactly. I'm glad-
They're sexy.
Like, people will buy me tacos in exchange for nudes. Why am I not? Why am I missing this opportunity?
Let's give them something to talk about. Am I right?
Babe, no, we have guests. I can't.
Okay, so.
Wait, have you on a shirt?
Yeah, that would be good. And then go buy tacos in that shirt. Anyway, moving on. I'm really interested in your new book. And I was particularly interested in when you wrote to us, you told us that it's a book about the adult entertainment industry cleverly disguised as a memoir. So I'm curious, like, what you mean by that and, like, what's the book all about?
Well, I had some people really interested in me writing a memoir. Mm-hmm. And maybe even like a fictionalized memoir. Like, I think there were some people that were hoping it would be like Sex in the City, you know, you know. But I was like, well, I don't wear designer shoes or have a nice apartment or go to fancy, you know, or like drink fancy cocktails. Like, you don't want my memoir because it's not that interesting. But then I had some other people who really legit wanted me to write, like, the encyclopedia of porn. And I was like, okay, I can't do that.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Research team and, like, 10 years, you know? And by the time I was done with it, everything would have changed anyway, so, like, I can't do that either. So I tried to write a book that is a memoir insofar as, like, it takes you through my experience of the porn industry. Like, looking through my eyes, you can be like, okay, first Lindsay did this. This is what Lindsay saw and experienced, and this is what she learned. So I'm really giving you a lot of information about the inner workings of the porn industry as I learned about them and mm-hmm. saw them. And, you know, there's also a lot about my personal life to explain, you know, how I got from point A to point Z, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, there's a lot of people that are really interested in picking up a memoir, but maybe wouldn't be like, oh, yes, I want to learn all about, you know, STI testing in Los Angeles and the legislation around that. Like, look, I think people should know about it. So I was able to, like, slip it in as part of my learning experience about the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. I think that's fascinating because that's kind of what we try to do with sex education on this show, where we're like, just hear about our ridiculous antics and also here's some news about consent.
Yeah, let's make it sex positive. And actually, one of the things that that I wrote about in the book was, like, I was, I don't know, 3 years into writing about porn professionally, and I was at the AVN Awards in Las Vegas, and I didn't even realize that there was, like, a smaller show floor off to the side. Like, I was trying to sneak someone in who didn't have a press pass, and so we were, like, going in a different door than I had gone in before. And we found ourselves in the Adult Novelty Expo,
mm-hmm.
surrounded by sex toys, and I was like, wait a second, I'm a writer. I write for my own magazine of photography. I could write about sex toys. Like, this. I just, like, rushed up to the first stand I saw and was like, hello, I am sex writer. Give me toys now, please. And it was great. Like, I caught them, like, at the very tail end, and people were just kind of trying to get rid of things anyway. So I went home with, like, $150 at least worth of sex toys in my suitcase. And then I got sent a whole bunch more, and I actually did sex toy reviews for a while. And I found it actually really limiting because I was like, maybe I'm just easy, but I was like, okay, it gave me an orgasm. Yay. Like, I didn't know how else to write about it. Like, everything was positive. I like sex toys. This is great. So I felt like after a little while, I just started doing, like, PR pieces. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I get and that.
You sent me your $150, like, vibrator. I'm not going to say something mean about it.
I mean, I will. I gladly will, but I feel like I used to have that thing where, like, I would bond to a sex toy if it gave me an orgasm. Almost like if a person gave me an orgasm, I would be more likely to enjoy their company for, like, at least a little while until that wore off. But, like, it's taken me, like, 4 or 5 years of sex toy reviewing to be able to be like, well, it made me come, but, like, it wasn't a good orgasm, or, like, it was a really annoying orgasm. So now I have a little bit more discerning.
It made me work for it. So, like...
Like, I had an orgasm, but I didn't
so
like it.
I get so salty with sex toys. Like, I'm like, it wasn't the one I wanted to be jerking off with. So how dare it not be the magic wand? Like, I've found, though, like, when I do write about sex toys at this point, I just kind of, and I know Kate does something similar, I kind of do more of a storytelling, like, mm-hmm, piece, yeah. And it's like, this is my experience with it in a way that's, like, more interesting, because back in the day, I used to do the, well, this is the sex toy, this is the stats about it, it made me feel good, woo!
Yeah, and, like, as a consumer of sex media, I always prefer, like, personal narratives anyway, which is why I'm interested in what you're saying about your book, is that, like, I would rather read about porn from an individual person's perspective, because I think if you showed the same porn scene to 500 different people, you'd have 500 different, like, reactions and responses to it, right? So it's interesting to hear what different people think.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, like, I was frankly terrified of writing, you know, just a straight up informative book about porn, because, like, one of the most amazing things to me about how people perceive pornography is that so many people think that it's, like, this monolithic entity. You mm-hmm. know, like, porn is X, Y, or Z, and that's it. And I'm like, you realize that porn is literally thousands of people, like, around the world, all doing different things, and some of them know each other, but many don't even have any idea what the others are doing. Like, and I've really found that if you go out in public and you say porn is like this, then there's going to be a whole lot of other people that are going to be mad at you because you did not take their perspective into account. And, like, you know, you can never take everyone's perspective into account, but I didn't want to put myself in the position of trying to be, like, the authority on the matter because I can't be. It's too big a subject.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I really thought, like, the memoir angle was smart because then I can just, like, if anyone gets mad at me, I can be like, hey, I'm just telling you what happened to me. What I know about, and I mean, not to say that I didn't research the hell out of this book. Like, mm-hmm. I read all the things, you know, but I still don't know a fraction of what I could know. There's just so much out there. Mm-hmm. And porn changed so fast. Like, you know, the technology is always changing. The platforms that people use for that technology is constantly shifting. Porn people are so smart. They're so tech savvy. And I can't keep up with it. Like, I'm still like, Snapchat? What the hell is this new technology?
This week's episode of the Dildorks is sponsored by Pleasure.com. And it's not spelled the way you would think. We had to ask them how to pronounce their site because it's spelled P-L-Z-U-R if you're a Canadian, or P-L-Z-U-R if you're American.
I was about to make fun of you for your Z, but okay.
I'm very aware of my Z. I'm very self-aware. So
it sounds like a euphemism for a body part.
Mm-hmm.
Like, very hyper aware of my Zed. Your Zed is showing, Kate.
So Pleasure.com is a sex toy retailer that is passionate about quality, body-safe toys. They carry a ton of different body-safe toys, and they actually have this cool rating system where they individually rate every toy that they carry in terms of body safety.
I was super excited about it when I saw it.
Yeah, it's nerdy shit. And I've just been working on this big article about toxic toys, so, like, I'm all about this right now. Level one is products containing phthalates, which you don't want to put on your bits. But then they have level two, which is phthalate-free but still porous, which just means that you can, like, cross-contaminate with porous products, but they're not going to, like, give you a chemical burn, probably. And then level three is phthalate-free and non-porous, and then level four is non-porous plastic alternative. So things that are, like, 100% body safe are in level three and four. And it's pretty cool because it lets you make an informed decision about the toys that you're shopping for.
Yeah, and I like that. There are a lot of companies out there that will only sell body-safe toys, which is also, like, awesome and great. But I like the stores that will include some porous stuff, because sometimes customers want that and will go to the store without education to get it,
mm-hmm.
and will learn nothing about it. Meanwhile, they come here, or when they used to shop, when I used to do sex toy retail, we had, like, the rabbit habit. People look for it all the time, and it's porous.
Mm-hmm.
And we would say, you know, hey, this is porous, here's how to use it semi-safely, you know, it's disposable, you are going to want to toss it after a little while, or you can upgrade. And more often than not, they would upgrade to something that they're not going to have to throw away after a while because it's harboring bacteria.
Mm-hmm. And it's good to have those options of the porous toys because they're often a lot cheaper, and so if you're not ready to splash out on something really pricey, you do have those options, and there are ways you can use them safely.
Yeah, and their product selection is pretty solid. Like, I'm looking at it now, and I'm really excited. They have the whole Tom of Finland line, and I want all of it. But especially, I want, like, there is a giant silver dick from the Tom of Finland line. This shit comes with a display case, and I need it in my life.
How big is that dick?
It's 2.5 inches wide at the largest point, so it's not, like, have dicks that big. Yeah. Like, I can take that. I can take 2 inches without warm-up, so I know I can do 2.5. That's, like, my Leroy, and it's 13.5 inches long.
Jesus.
And it's, like, this swirly silver silicone, and it has a suction cup, which can't possibly support that much weight.
Well,
and a fucking display case. they want it.
They carry a lot of stuff that I already own and like as well. Like, one thing I'm looking at right now is the Magic Wand Rechargeable, which I honestly use almost every day. It's like a workhorse of my toy box, and they have it for $109.99, which is pretty good.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cheap.
It's really good. And another great thing is that we actually have a coupon for you, which will make things cheaper for you. You can get 20% off your total purchase from pleasure.com with the coupon code DILDORKS. And I'll spell that website again for you in Canadian and American, PLZUR.com or PLZUR.com. Don't forget to use your coupon code DILDORKS to get 20% off anything from their site, and they have like a huge BDSM section, including a shit ton of chastity stuff. So if that's your jam, get all up in there. So you're a porn critic, you would know. What's good porn these days? Like, what is porn that you personally like and would recommend? I'm curious.
Well, for me, like, it's easy for me to say this because, like, I am queer and I don't have a preference when it comes to, you know, like, gender performance or identity, and like, I don't, I'm open to anything, so it's really easy for me to say this compared to some other people, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
But anything where the people are like, if there's two or more people, if they have chemistry with each other, mm-hmm. if they're in, that is all I need. you know, and if solo scene, like, if the person is just really feeling themselves, like, really into it, awesome. That's great. That's all I look for. Like, the difficulty with that is, like, there's no guarantee. If you're, like, being, you know, a super great consumer and you're paying for your porn, you don't really know until you've already paid for it and you're watching it whether you're going to get that connection. Mm-hmm. So that's really difficult. Like, but there are, you know, certain directors, certain performers, certain companies that try to make things on set as conducive as possible to that type of connection and authenticity. And a lot of the time they are, unsurprisingly, feminist. Run, you know, because they're trying really hard to make people comfortable. They're making sure that backstage, like, everybody's well fed, that they have all the toys that they might need, that they have the lube and the safer sex implements that they might want to use, you know, that everyone is relaxed, that the people involved in the scene have talked to each other about what they want to do, what they're comfortable with, you know, what their hard limits are. And, you know, if you go into it like that and you've had a chance to get to know the person that you're working with, then there's a higher likelihood that you're going to have a fantastic connection when the camera starts rolling. But, you know, it doesn't always happen like that anyway. You can't,
yeah,
you can't account for chemistry. Mm-hmm. But when it's there, like, I can be watching almost anybody and just be like, this is amazing.
I love Tristan Taramino's films for that. And like, when you were talking about negotiations, I was thinking about her Rough Sex series, where you actually see the female performer lay out in advance what she wants to happen. And I love that type of kink scene where you do see that negotiation, because for me, like, as a feminist, it's very easy for me to flip from like, oh, this is kinky and hot, to like, oh, I hope she's okay, I hope she consented to that. So like, to see her like consent to it in advance helps me relax and get into the scene, and I love those.
Yeah.
I also just find the negotiation really hot. Like, that yeah. discussion of, like, watching the chemistry build while they talk about all of the things they're going to do, and watching them get excited about the things they're about to do
mm-hmm.
is, like, super hot, too. I'm like, they'll be like, you know, so, like, how do you feel about face slapping? And the other person's like, oh, I feel pretty good about it. And I'm like, oh, my God, there's going to be face slapping.
Template, like, in your personal life for, like, hey, negotiating and having, like, a clear conversation about consent beforehand can be sexy. Mm-hmm. You can too. Like, I think that's so valuable
mm-hmm.
for, you know, younger people who are like, I don't know, is it okay if I ask this person that I just brought home to see their, like, STI paperwork, you know? Like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's cool, and you can do it, and you can probably make it sexy too. Like, take some notes when you're watching, especially like kink.com and like Tristan Taormina scenes. Take some notes.
Totally. And I'm seeing more discourse about that idea in the past few years about the notion that we learn things about sex from porn now. Like, teens growing up now are learning, you know, sex ed info from porn, which is part of what Cindy Gallup was trying to address with her Make Love Not Porn project. And I think that that's really interesting and true, and also gives a level of responsibility to the porn industry that they maybe did not imagine was going to be there when porn started to be a thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And some people are like really embracing that role, and because they find the responsibility just part of like what they're trying to do ethically anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But some people are really pissed off about that because, you know, nobody that I know of in the porn industry is trying to make porn for minors. Like, mm-hmm. That's nobody wants anything to do with that.
Right.
I don't want kids watching, you know? But, like, they also have to acknowledge that kids probably are going to watch their stuff. And, like, it's, I feel like the crux of the issue is the same as, like, every other issue, especially around sex in America particularly, which is, like, this is... The parents should be teaching their kids about this,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I understand that most parents don't want to think that their kid is watching pornography. I understand that. That's a really uncomfortable conversation to have. Like, most parents don't even want to talk about sex at all with their kids. But, like, the reality of the situation is that unless something happens and all the free porn on the internet gets wiped out, like... it's gonna happen. Your kids, like, that's a new reality that both the porn industry and parents just have to learn to live with, that everybody's watching porn for free on the internet and you got to make the best that you can out of it. And I do really think that a lot of parents might kind of see the advent of free porn as like an easy way out of having hard conversations with their kids mm-hmm. about sex. And that sucks because, yeah, there are people like Tristan Taormina that are doing it right and, you know, putting that out there into the world that, like, this is a great way to have a conversation about consent before you go into a sexual situation. But most of the people who are even making responsible content like that are not the ones that are putting it on the internet for free. The people who are doing that are cutting out that whole nice conversation that was had before the scene started.
Right.
And putting out that. So, like, everybody loses in that sense. Like, the kids that are watching it don't know that that conversation happened. And you may as well not have had it in the first place, as far as they're concerned.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that's why my thing, and I will always say this, and it will very rarely be heard, but, like, my thing is always pay for your porn if you possibly can. Like, all the bells and whistles, like, the production credits, the music, the conversations that go on before and afterward, like, they're important because it's, those are your indications that what you're watching is not just happening naturally. This is not an organic process for the most part. This is staged. It was recorded. It was edited. It was put together for your enjoyment as a piece of entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. Trappings, and you're 15 years old. It's real easy for you to watch a kink.com scene and think like, oh yeah, this is what sex is like, which it could be. But you have a lot of learning to do before you get to that point, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Don't run before you can walk.
And like, not for anything, it's not just kids that are learning about sex from porn, it's fucking adults too.
Mm-hmm.
Because no one's talking about it. So I think that's what a lot of sex educators are trying to do, are trying to be like, this is entertainment, and it's great, and here are all the things that you need to know for, like, real life. You know, the comparison that you wouldn't learn to drive from Fast and the Furious. Same idea. You know?
And what's with Fast and Furious, too, is, like, A, they have a ton of special effects.
Mm-hmm.
B, they have stunts who are trained, you know? And, like, the thing with porn is there are no stunt doubles, and sometimes there are special effects, but, like, those are really people really doing that thing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There's actually less of a layer of, like, removal between the consumer and what you're watching. So, like, I think it can be confusing when you tell people that this is entertainment. You know, this is, like, fake. This is a fantasy. It's like, well, it's actually not that fake, but it's not really real either. It's in this very weird sound.
Yeah, I think something I've even noticed just, like, working in sex toy retail is as soon as you put sex in front of anything, people completely forget all of the rules they've had about anything else. Like, they know how to do retail. They know how to shop for groceries and new t-shirts. But sex retail must be completely different, right? And I'm like, nah, not really. And the same thing I think happens with porn. Like, we lose all media literacy we learned about anything else. We have no capability to look at it with, like, a critical eye because someone's dick's out. So everything's different. I'm like,
oh! Oh, God, a penis! Oh, no. What do I do? No, it's so true. It's so true. And I've had, like, so many conversations with awesome people like you, you know, who have, like, media literacy is a thing with porn. But, you know, if you're a person who, you know, signs online, jerks off for, like, 10 minutes with the lights off, and then X's out of it, cleans your search history, and goes about business, like, you know, it doesn't necessarily occur to you that much more to that experience than what you just did.
Yeah.
And I think that's honestly where I was at, like, when I started writing professionally about porn. Like, I did have some, like, little doubts, you know, whispering in my ear, but I was able to just shut them out for the most part because it didn't really apply to the rest of my life. And that was 10 years ago, like, before Pornhub was one of the biggest websites in the world, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Things have changed, and porn is a much bigger part of our lives, I think, than it used to be.
Totally.
For better and worse.
Thank you so much, Lindsay, for joining us on this episode. This was really fun. I'm always thrilled to geek out with other porn nerds. Where can people find you online and find your book?
Well, my website is lindsayg.com, and I'm going to be pedantic and spell it because my name is spelled funny. So it's lynsey.com. There's no I, there's no D, it's all hippie-like. and you can find my book there. I have, like, a page. It's all about the book with links to all the places that it's for sale. But you can get it all the normal places, like Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Powell's, IndieBound, BookSoup, all those places. And if it's not in your local bookshop, you can go in and ask them to order it. That would be great. I've also been writing a lot for Mel Magazine online recently. They're so much fun. I'm doing this awesome series called Porn Around the World, where I'm talking to people in different countries about the porn industry as it exists there currently, which is super fun. So, like, if anyone has an interest, I've written about Nigeria, the UK, India, Brazil, Israel, and the newest one is going to be about Australia. It's coming out this week, so super psyched about that.
That's so awesome. Interesting.
Yeah, really interesting. The one on Nigeria, super interesting. Look that one. I'm also writing for Glamour.com now and Men'sHealth.com, and those are the main things that I'm doing these days.
Cool. We both just submitted new pieces for Glamour today. We're all Glamour writers on this call.
Okay.
Fun. Do you want to say, like, your social media and stuff?
Oh, sure. So my social media is a little confusing because I wrote under multiple pen names for a while. So sort of like a smattering. But you can find me on Facebook. My page is Lindsay G. Writer. On Twitter, I'm Miss Lags a Lot, just like it sounds. And I mean, you can find me on my other places from there. Honestly, I don't remember what my names are on my other social media.
Okay, cool. Thank you so much, Lindsay. I have been Kate Sloan. You can find my sex blog at girlyjuice.net and the rest of my writing at katewritesaboutsex.com. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. Where's your stuff?
I'm Bex. You can find all my writing at bextalksex.com. You can find me on social media at bextalksex on Twitter and Instagram. Together, we're the Dildorks. We're at the Dildorks on Twitter and Instagram, and you can find us at thedildorks.com or by searching the Dildorks in your favorite podcast app. This week, tweet at us with your favorite porn performer. I need new people to start watching, so give me your recommendations.
I know, I'm always watching the same stuff over and over and over again because I'm so boring.
I am too lazy to find new stuff. Yeah. I'm just like, this Victor Belmont scene's great. Let me watch it 6 more times. It's fine.
Belmont's hot, so.
I know.
Such babe.
I have my favorites and I just keep going back. Yeah. I'm actually trying to think who my favorite performer is right now. You know, no, it's Mickey Maude.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Ugh. Oh, my God. Have you seen the sadistic handjob series on Kink Academy that he's in? It's amazing. Oh. You have to go look it up. It's so great. Okay. I got to do the rest of the stuff that we do. Thank you so much.
I need to go watch porn.
Yeah, really. Thank you so much to Protodome for letting us use his song I Want You in My Bedroom as our theme song. And thank you to Amy Gardner for doing our art. She is at starboots_ on Twitter. And thank you also to pleasure.com for sponsoring this episode. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye.